Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday, dear Thrillcast. Happy birthday to you and many more. Fingers crossed. Hello, Earthlets. It's our birthday.
Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Yep, Borag Thung, Earthlets, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Yes, we have been going for a full year. So I'm going to start off by saying a big thank you to every single one of you for listening, downloading, spreading the word about the 2080 Thrillcast. It's been a fantastic year full of, I'm sure you'll agree, thrill-packed episodes, and 2016 is going to be no different. We've got some great guests starting off with this week. We have kind of a person who some readers may not recognise the name of, just because although he was integral to 2000 AD for many years, he was always behind the scenes, and that is Chief Editorial Droid Steve McManus, the guardian of 2000 AD, who ushered in some incredible series and creative talent. So we're going to be talking to him, because you may or may not have seen the news that we are going to be publishing his memoirs about the time he spent editing 2000 AD. More on that later when we chat to Steve, but that's a very exciting announcement, and it's going to be absolutely fantastic to speak to him. Also this episode, we have been collating your questions, and we will be putting them to Tharg, the Mighty One, alien editor of 2000 AD, in our regular Ask Tharg, well, semi-regular Ask Tharg feature. And, well, you know, it's our birthday, so we're going to have a little celebration, and we are going to have a quiz, because everybody loves a quiz, Earthlets, and that will have a very, 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 very special prize. So stand by for that as we prepare to celebrate the first birthday of the 2000 AD Thrillcast! So to kick off our birthday celebrations, we're going to welcome back the being, the supreme being that makes all this possible and on whose mercy we throw ourselves on a regular basis, and that is Tharg, the Mighty One. We've been collecting your questions, and we're going to put them to him. So brace yourselves, Earthlets, for the sheer concentrated thrill power that emanates from his mightiness as he enters the sub-basement. All hail, Mighty One. Welcome back to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. We thank you for taking the time from your schedule to grace us with your honourable presence.
Thank you, Molchar. I trust you have not been slacking during the Earthlets Christmas holiday.
No, of course not, your mightiness. We've been slaving away. You know, we did a thrillcast the other week, and you know I'm committed to the cause.
We shall see about that, Molchar. In the meantime, bring me the questions from our mighty readers.
Of course, Tharg. Bear with me 2 seconds. So the first question that we have, Mighty One, is from Earthlet Roger Blake. He's actually sending 2 questions, if you don't mind answering both of them. What's Beetlejuicean for bon appetit, or enjoy your meal?
That will be Splurix Colondi, if you're in polite company, Earthlets, or just blah, if you're with friends.
Okay, Art Droid, this is another question from Roger. Art Droid McMahon seems to be producing a lot of 2000 AD related fan art in his own time. After he's done with Tank Girl, why not have him back for a stint? He seems keen enough.
Deadlines and workload permitting, I'll always be happy to have the McMahon droid back in the prog, Earthlet.
Okay, I'm sure everybody be delighted if that could happen, Mighty One. So the next one is from Steve Sterling, and he says, I love the Thrillcast. I still chuckle at the opening of episode 2 with Molchar and his Borag Thung Splendig Verthrig cock-up. Comedy gold.
I agree, Erfit Sterling. That was most amusing. How are the wounds healing, Molchar?
they're fine, thank you. I got the leg reattached. Earthlick Sterling's question is, I've had 3 decades to ponder this and still don't get it. Nemesis equals deadlock in Nemesis Book 4? Huh, how does that work? Tharg, please explain.
You would challenge me with such things, Earthlit. Such are the powers of chaos magic that I fear that if I were to attempt to explain its intricacies to your simian brains, they would more than likely explode. Suffice to say, deadlock and nemesis became one on the ethereal level, okay?
Well, thank you for being so magnanimous there, mighty one. So we have Connor Calvert next, who says, long-time fan, first-time emailer. Has there been a story that you, mighty one, regret not printing when you first saw it, or a story you regret printing?
Never apologise. Never explain. Always a good maxim to live by, Earthlit. All is Zar Jars within the pages of the galaxy's greatest comic, for I, Tharg the Mighty, have deemed it so.
Well, there you have it, Earthlets. Gavin Aslett has sent an email in saying, as a reader of 2000 AD since Prog 9, I asked the same question again as I did in August 1979 in Prog 126. Will the 2000 AD version of Dan Dare return to the pages of 2000 AD? High time 2000 AD paid respect to their readership and not renege on the promise they made at the time that Dan Dare will return. A reprinted graphic novel of Dan Dare's 2000 AD adventures is not enough. what say you to that, Tharg?
Dan Dare will be returning to the pages of 2000 AD to finish off the story in prog number 10,000, Terran. Providing we're all above sea level by that point, and the apes have not usurped humanity.
there you have it, Earthlet, Aslet. An Earthlet called Steve Hallam has sent in 3 questions. I'm sorry we're taking up so much of your time, Mighty One.
Get on with it, Molchar.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So the first question is, I had a dinky car model of the K2001 Land Rover. Can you explain how it came to be in a Judge Dredd comic, Prog 62? Was it branded 2000 AD merchandise? I think he's talking about the one from the Cursed Earth.
The exact details are lost in the mists of Thrill Power, Earthlit. But from what my ancient memory can recall, the Matchbox Adventure 2000 series of toys came first, and the Land Raider was inserted into the Cursed Earth story as some kind of promotional exercise.
Okay, thank you, Mighty One, for clearing that up. So the next question from Earthlit Hallam is, when is the hardcover deluxe edition of Bonjo from Beyond the Stars coming out?
Round about the same time that Dan Dare is returning to the prog, Earthlet.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mighty One. And final question. Steve Hallam says, after rejoining the Weekly Faithful over a year ago, I found my Thrill Power addiction becoming a bit of a problem. Whilst the Weekly Prog keeps me on the straight and narrow, I've been hankering after vintage thrills on eBay. Can I ask your mighty thoughts on some nice hardback reprints of entire old progs to celebrate your coming anniversary, including adverts and everything, plus colour reproduction? Progs 1 to 12 would be amazing.
I have no plans for such a reprint initiative, Earthlet. Bear in mind that every story that ran in the first dozen progs is now available in its own collection. And Mac 1 is in Extreme Editions 6 and 9, available to buy from my future shop for a mere $2.99 each. Then you can, with the judicious application of scissors and sticky-backed plastic, assemble your own vintage lineup, if you so wish.
And with that, the Mighty One has left the Nerve Centre. I want to thank all the Earthlets for sending in their questions to Tharg the Mighty. If you have a question for Tharg the Mighty himself, then please do send it into the Thrillcast at thrillcast@2000adonline.com. That's thrillcast@2000adonline.com. And we'll try and tempt the Beetlejuicean Titan that is our editor down to the sub-basement for more Ask Tharg. So it is a real privilege to welcome somebody whose work was part of my childhood and has had a fundamental lasting influence on the way that 2000 AD, the galaxy's greatest comic, has grown and grown over the years. And that is Steve McManus. Welcome to the podcast, Steve.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Absolute pleasure. So the big news today on the 2000 AD podcast is that we are going to be publishing your memoirs of your time editing 2000 AD. Tell us a little bit about this volume of tales from the editor's chair.
Well, it kind of spans my career in comics from being a rookie sub-editor in 1973 at the age of 20. All the way through to kind of 1990, I guess, 18 years later. And I guess the point of the book is that I just happened to be at the right place at the right time to witness some great new comics come along and have the opportunity to work on them.
Because when did you actually start at 2000 AD? What year was that?
Well, I always sort of put it down to Prog 76, which I guess is 79,
somewhere around there.
Yeah, so that what kind of then? Yeah, because I remember the Robo Hunter cover by Ian Gibson was very striking.
So. Tell us a little bit, because you mentioned you came into comics at the age of 20.
Yeah.
How did you come by coming into comics? Because it was even back then, when it was kind of at its height, it was still a fairly niche industry within magazine publishing, wasn't it?
Very much so, yes. I think it was quite a tight-knit group of people. my introduction was quite by chance, really, in that I applied for a job on a football magazine called Shoot, and they basically said go away. as I trudged forlornly to the door, they said, "Oh, there is a job going on one of the comics downstairs. You might care to knock on their door and see what's up." Which is what I did.
And describe what you were doing at the very beginning, because sub-editor was back then, I suppose, as now, it was very much a kind of master of many trades kind of job, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a team of four, the editor and the sub-editor, and in the same room, the art editor and what was unkindly known as the bodger, the assistant to the art editor. But the duties of the sub were to open the artwork that came in from the artists and make sure they had followed the script and check the dialogue matched the script or tweak it to make sure it matched. And then show that to the editor and then pass it over to a letterer. The other duties were, of course, opening the mail, writing the reader's letters page, devising what they called then tops and tags, where you had to summarize what was happening in each page in sort of five words. So, for example, if it was Captain Hurricane hitting someone on page one of the script, you would write Hurricane let fly with something, 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 you know. and that was pretty much how it began. You were pretty much also reading the proofs and stuff, basic stuff.
Okay. And what titles were you working on at the time?
Well, the first one was Valiant, which was a common adventure paper with football, war, the usual mixture. As I say, its lead character was Captain Hurricane. And from there, I actually went on to Battle Picture Weekly, which was pure war, and the first Mills Wagner creation. And then I did quite a bit of work on Action Comic, another Mills creation, but I wasn't on staff. I was more of the time Action Man.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Daredevil stunts that were suggested by the readers. I think then the next one was Star-Lord, which kind of came and went in a blink of an eye, and then that's how I found myself in 2000 AD.
The period alone, just the names you've mentioned there, that was an extraordinary flowering of a new type of British comic. You know, you had Battle Picture Weekly, you had Action, and then through to 2000 AD and Star-Lord. And this was when things were really beginning to change. At the time, did you get a sense that the stuffy old world of children's comics that were very by the book and to a certain extent a little bit straight-faced was changing?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Mm. And, I mean, you only had to spend 5 minutes in the company of Pat Mills and John Wagner as they talked about how they were, you know, what their plans were, to understand that here was a major revolution, if that's the word.
Yeah.
But a change in... it was, you know, basically... new ideas, fresh ideas, seeing what's on at the cinema and bringing them across onto the page.
Yeah. So while this was all going on, did you feel that as part of this close-knit family that you were really kind of involved in this great project, I guess, that it was?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I was working on Battle, and doing stuff for Pattern Action, so I couldn't have been more involved, really. And John, for a very short while, took over the editorship of Valiant, in fact, and tried to kind of bring it into the 20th century, as it were. So, it was a merry band of brothers, I think.
It's been really interesting seeing people's reactions to the Future Shock documentary that happened recently. And you do get that sense of, as I said, comics was kind of still is a very small world. And so when you're working closely together with people, even if it's in the kind of production side of things, you do get that, a close-knit community.
Yeah, definitely. And that includes the freelance community as well. Mm. So it was all first name terms because it was so small. It was unlike me that if you said Simon, they wouldn't know who Simon was because there were two Simons.
Sure.
You know, although actually there are quite a few Simons now, but, but you know what I mean. It was if you said Eric, it that could only have been Eric Bradbury. If you said Carlos, well, it could only have been Carlos Ascaris. So it was, and I suppose it might have been a bit like the music industry, you know, everyone knows each other, and it's actually quite, you know, loads of people are managed by the same management company, so it's all quite close-knit.
So having found yourself at IPC, working on these books, how did you find yourself coming on to 2000 AD? Because obviously we're talking the best part of a decade that you were working there. So I presume over time, you know, your responsibilities changed and adapted.
Yeah. Well, as I describe in the book, the way I found myself on 2000 AD was out of the Star-Lord 2000 AD merger.
Yeah.
Where 2000 AD got Strontium Dog and ABC Warriors.
Mm.
Well, no, sorry, Roebusters.
Yeah, yeah.
But they also got me because management decided to make me part of the bargain, which kind of meant one of the subs on 2000 AD, Nick Landau, had to sort of leave.
Oh, dear.
Pretty painful all round, actually. Yeah. But it's quite well described in the book, if I say so myself.
Right.
So there I am with Kelvin Gosnell as the editor, working away very hard on other things as well. And to my left would have been Kevin O'Neill, to my right, Roy Preston, and another guy called Colin Wyatt. Mm-hmm. And there we were, four of us.
Right. Describe some of these personalities for us, because these are names that kind of echo down the history of 2000 AD. What were they like as people?
Well, I think that the one thing that that they all have in common is their passion for comics, for writing and drawing. The second thing is they all have a great sense of humour,
right.
Sometimes pretty dark, but and they also actually had quite learned interests outside the narrow field of comics. Mm. I mean, Kevin O'Neill, as I describe in the book, is a really big film buff, you know, and he knows loads and loads about that. John Wagner, who I shared a flat with some 6 months or so, is, as you probably know, a larger-than-life character.
Absolutely.
Pat Mills is Pat Mills, amazingly energetic, extrovert. So you get all these kind of people contributing, creating, you know, meshing, and no wonder you end up with something as cool as 2000 AD.
So when you started 2000 AD, you were still in a sub-editor role.
Yes.
How did you come to have a greater responsibility at 2000 AD?
Well, I'm sitting there in the office, as you do,
yeah.
And Kelvin Gosnell, the editor, walks in, points at me and says, "You are now the editor of 2000 AD, and turns on his heel and walks out.
Right.
And this was all to do with some big argument he was having with management, and you know, it kind of freaked him out so much that he threw his hands up in the air and said, "I can't be dealing with this."
Right.
It was as simple as that, Michael.
That's fairly extraordinary. I mean, anyone who's ever gone for any kind of promotion is probably just raging at the idea that they can just suddenly be appointed. I mean, what was your reaction at that exact moment?
Well, I kind of tottered back to my desk and I sat down, and then it suddenly struck me that here I was in charge of, well, responsible to, say, 30 freelance creators, three staff, and 100,000 readers each week.
Sure.
It just blew my mind.
And what was your feeling towards 2008 at the time? Because you'd come over from Star-Lord, which had been the slightly more expensive, glossier, you know, better paper, more colour sister comic, and that had been absorbed into the kind of scrappy of original, still being printed on fairly poor paper.
Yeah.
So what was your attitude towards the comic as a living, breathing thing, but also to the kind of stories that it was telling?
Well, I think the merger with Star-Lord gave 2000 AD a massive shot in the arm. After its initial success, I rather thought it had lost its way a bit, lost its mojo.
Yeah.
So just the comfort of knowing that pretty soon Johnny Alpha and Hammerstein Rogers would be patrolling the pages of 2000 AD in place of less affair like Antwoord's was a great place to start.
Sure.
Great place to start. And that was Prog 86, I think. And But, I mean, the general feeling was that 2000 AD, with its cursed earth front covers, was the more kind of alive title, where Star-Lord, despite its better painted front covers, still seemed to hark back to an era of science fiction, you know, proper science fiction. So, but as soon as you put Strong Jim Dog and the Roadbusters in with Dread, then you only need two more stories to make a winning title.
After Kelvin had appointed you on the spot to be editor, Can you remember what your first act was as editor?
Yeah, to look past Prog 70, past the merger, 86 to Prog 100, and say, right, from here, we're going to draw a line, and this is how we're going to take the comic forward. It was that was as simple as that, really.
Right, right. And what, after drawing that line in the sand, what did you want 2000 AD to be?
Oh, well, more of the same, in the sense that I thought there was nothing wrong with it in that sense, with the stories that were Dread, Robo Hunter, etc.
Yeah.
It was just the weaker stuff we had to shed. And it's all very easy to say that, but then you need the creative talent around to come up with the replacement stuff.
Sure.
And that wasn't always, you know, I mean, Pat and John could only write so many scripts a week. Carlos could only draw so many, and Dave and stuff. So it was a fairly kind of broad, I didn't have a mission or anything. What do you call it? A mission statement.
Yeah.
A big picture in my head. And that's quite hard anyway, because when you're on a weekly title, it's more about the next 7 days and the next 7 months, you know.
Sure, sure. So I was talking to our current editor, Matt Smith, about the fact that we're going to be chatting on the podcast. And one of the things that he brought up was that up until that point, 2000 AD had been almost kind of hand to mouth in the thing. Artwork didn't have to be in until a matter of days before it was seeing print. So maintaining the kind of very strenuous weekly regime for particularly artists was quite difficult. So you, in those early days, you do see a lot of chopping and changing of artists on stories. But you brought in a specific policy of stockpiling series so that you could get more consistent runs.
Yeah, within the constraints of the budget.
Yeah.
And that helped enormously. Yeah, you're quite right. But after a while, I got a letter from the MD, the managing director, a memo saying, do you realise you've got £30,000 worth of stock? And I knew damn well I had, because I could see it all sitting in the plans chest overflowing. But I just assured him that every last page would be used, and this was the only way to sort of keep the quality up.
Sure.
And Matt's quite right. Before that, it was very much a kind of last-minute process, which was fine when an artist could draw 3 pages a week. But when the stories were 5 or 6 pages, they couldn't, hence the chopping and changing, hence stories dropping out. And that had to be addressed, even if it meant a light spanking from management.
Well, considering that Kelvin had appointed you editor because of his own issues with management, what was your relationship like with IPC?
Well, I think I was still quite young, so I tended to not be confrontational, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I kind of sort of nodded and then went away and tried not to do what they wanted me to do too much anyway.
I think that's the best policy with anything, really.
Yeah. So in that sense, the relation was just a normal working relation. I just kept my head down and out of the way.
I guess it's like a lot of publishing where so long as you're getting the results, they're not necessarily going to demand that you follow their orders to a T.
Exactly, yeah. And I think early on in my editorship, after the success of the merger and Prog 100, there was a period where they thought we weren't getting the results.
Right, okay.
And they wanted to merge, well, they did in the end, merge us with Tornado to make an adventure comic. So those were quite tricky times when I was told to take the science fiction out of 2000 AD and make it more adventure-led.
Yeah.
So that's all described quite neatly in the book.
Right. Well, as I don't want to reveal too much of what's in the book because it's an absolutely cracking read. But
You've read it, yeah?
Yes. It's wonderful because it's having obviously read Thrill Power Overload by David Bishop. There's the 2000 AD. The Judge Dredd mega history from a number of years ago, which is kind of the forensic analysis of the early days of Judge Dredd. But on there, you've also got the Future Shock documentary. It feels like such a wonderful, interesting, vibrant period, and we've talked about the sense of a close-knit community, and there's something quite warming about that. Kind of looking back, because my background is in local newspapers. I used to walk through an old empty print hall where the big plinths that the presses sat on, completely empty because they'd been sold off to scrap. So that there was kind of ghostly echoes of this once proud industry. And I think it's particularly now where publishing is a very different world.
Yeah.
That kind of sense of, a friendship circle doing good things is incredibly alluring.
Yeah, and nostalgic. If you were there, you're right. Yes, I agree.
What moved you to actually get your memories down in print?
Well, I was kind of mooching around the internet, as one does, that's the word, and I couldn't help noticing people fondly recalling comics of their youth, i.e. around about the 70s, 60s maybe.
Sure.
But they were having trouble sometimes remembering the name of the comic, let alone who was in it.
Yeah.
And it just occurred to me that there was a knowledge gap there, especially from the sense of someone on the inside who could fill that gap for them. And it just occurred to me that I, out of pure chance, had been a witness, and partaker to that crucial moment when the new comics came through from Mills and Wagner and Jerry Finley Day. So I thought, oh, well, I'll just see if I can write this down. And I started. And I realized pretty soon it was fun to write, and B, it was a little bit of cathartic for me, quite like that.
Mm-hmm. And so looking back on that period where you were editing 2000 AD, is there a moment that you are particularly proud of having either taken part in or ushered in or just having witnessed?
I think Prog 232, which I think Ace Tracking Code debut in that issue, but you've also got Nemesis, you've got Rogue Trooper, you've got Dread, and maybe the Dark Judges. I think that was a real high for the comic at that time.
Mm.
Just an amazing coalescence of talent, scripting and art. And I was just, in answer to your question, just be proud to have been able to help them get that stuff to the printer.
Yeah. I mean, it's an extraordinary period of as you said earlier, the kind of, there'd been a bit of a lull, but then there's this extraordinary coalescing together of extraordinary talents and great stories. When it came time for you to move on from 2000 AD, What informed that decision? Was it just that you felt it was time to move on, or was there some sort of motivating factor?
Well, actually, it wasn't so much a case of moving on from 2000 AD so much as leaving the company entirely.
Right.
It just all sorts of bad, you know, it was, what did they call that? Oh, yeah, perfect storm.
Right.
Perfect storm of stuff just gathered and just kind of rained down. So I thought on my head, and I just freaked out and said, as you would have read in the book, I kind of let management know that I'm off, and this triggers a new course for me.
You mentioned a new course. What did you move on to after 2008?
Well, what they said to me was, why don't you research a comic about superheroes in America? Come back and, you know, produce one. So I thought, well, they're going to keep paying me. I may as well take a trip around the States.
Right.
out of that trip came the notion of crisis.
Right.
And with the contract for creators to share, get at the back end and everything. And also the notion of the title for readers of 2008 to graduate to if they wanted.
Yeah.
As they got older.
Because it's quite a remarkable thing that not only were you there at that early revolution of battle and action and 2008 and Star-Lord, but then you had a significant hand in the next major revolution in British comics, which was the era of creator rights, of creators being much more in charge of this rather than the big publishing houses. It's incredible that you were kind of center stage for both of those things.
Yeah, I agree. It was crazy, really. Crazy. I mean, it was crazy because the management just gave me the keys to the kingdom, really,
right,
assuming that what they'd end up with would be another money spinner, which wasn't the case. But there were many benefits that came out of crisis, as you've described. The fact that it opened the door to loads of talent that were finding it hard to get their work seen elsewhere. And from there, I mean, I'm thinking of all sorts of people, really, who I know now have gone on to do great things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I do wonder whether I were actually, in retrospect, was the right person to be given the keys. Maybe someone with a bit more kind of, I mean, yeah, it couldn't have happened, but perhaps Matt Smith would have been a better choice.
he was but a youngling at the time, unfortunately.
Yeah, a new chapter. So I hope that kind of sheds some light on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're coming up to the 40th anniversary of 2000 AD next February. What's it like seeing this thing still, not only still going, but having weathered some pretty rough times, but you know, in what, I don't just speak as the publicity person for 2008, you'd expect me to say something like this, but you know, we hear it from readers that we're going through a new golden age, which was a term that was applied to when you were editing the comic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 40 years. I mean, first of all, congratulations in advance to everyone down there and Chris and Jason. When I look at 2000 AD, all its sort of things on the internet, the thrill cast, stuff on YouTube, the actual website and everything you can buy, whoa, it's like someone's worked really hard here to build something. And I'm not going to use a marketing term, but it's a hell of a brand. So I just think it's great. It's a little bit like perhaps if you think of football before the Premiership and all that Sky money came in, which is quite an amateur thing, really, football.
Yeah.
You know. But now it's all very professional and slick. And 2000 AD looks to be retained its kind of grassroots bite. So long may it continue.
Absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly there. But you know what, Steve? I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute thrill to talk to you, and reading your memoirs, as it's the way you describe it, it's almost like you're there to participate in this. And as somebody who came on reading 2080 when he was a kid, you know, I know I got an awful lot out of it, and I'm sure everyone who reads it will think exactly the same. So thank you for, number one, writing it, and thank you for coming on to the Thrillcast to talk to us.
Well, no, thank you, and I think you're right, it's quite chatty, it's a kind of a colloquial recollection, so I hope it does make people feel they're there sitting in the office with me having a cigarette looking out the window.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again, Steve.
Thanks, yeah, to you too, and take care.
Bye-bye. So, Earthlets, the Thrillcast may be 1 year old, but 2000 AD next month in February will be 39 years old, which means that we have an absolute cosmos of characters and stories for you to explore through our graphic novels, both available in print and online. But for those of you who think they know 2000 AD, we've got a bit of a challenge for you. To celebrate our first birthday, we're giving you the chance to win a very special prize with our first birthday quiz. Yeah, we've got 12 questions selected by the archive droids to test your 2000 AD knowledge. So if you think you're a Squawkstek Thargo, well, we're going to test that right now. The prize is rather lovely. You will get, if you are randomly chosen as the winner, a copy of every graphic novel that we print in 2016. So that's a hefty prize with some amazing titles included. Not only have we got things like Judge Dredd Dead Zone, Gold Tiger, which we've got more coming up on a future podcast. We've also got Planet of the Damned. We've got Sooner or Later. And let's not forget two wonderful classic series, Judge Dredd, The Cursed Earth, Uncensored, and Alan Moore, John Wagner, and Alan Grant, and Jesus Redondo's Monster. So get your pens at the ready as we prepare to go into our first birthday quiz.
It's quiz time!
Without much further ado, let's crack on with the questions. Question number one. In Nemesis the Warlock, who did Torquemada marry after his first wife, Candida, was committed to an asylum? Who did Torquemada marry after his first wife, Candida, was committed to an asylum? Question number two. Which of Zenith's singles is at number 3 in the pop charts when the story opens? In the first edition of Zenith, which of his singles is at number 3 in the pop charts? Question number 3. What do Galen DeMarco and Bella Bagley both have in common? Question number 4. Which organisation issues a warrant for Adolf Hitler in Strontium Dog, the Stickelgruber Grab? Question number 5. Helm, Gunner and Bagman were the names of the biochips in Rogue Trooper. What were the equivalents in the Friday reboot by Dave Gibbons and Will Simpson? Question number 6. On what planet does Dredd encounter the Jigsaw disease? And for a bonus point, what is its old Earth name? Question number 7. How did the following chief judges die? Chief Judge Goodman, Chief Judge Griffin, and Chief Judge Vault. Question number 8. To what tribe does Slain the Barbarian belong? Question number 9. Match the character to the exclamation. Gradona Greeny! Boje moi! Ay caramba! Hooting heck! And the characters Cy Judge Anderson, Nikolai Dante, Carlos Sanchez Robostogie, Ace Garp. So just match the character to the exclamation. Question number 10. Who leads Banzai Battalion? Question number 11. What's the connection between Pedro Julio Montes, Byron Ambrose, and Roberto Smith? And finally, question number 12. According to Alan Moore and Brendan McCarthy's English Flandrutian phrasebook, what is the English translation of Skud Gen Gear? So make sure you note down all the answers to your questions and email them to thrillcast@2080online.com with the subject headline quiz answers, and the pick a droid will randomly choose one at random from all entries, and the lucky winning Earthlit will win one copy of every graphic novel that we publish in 2016. Well, we have come to the end of our first birthday episode, Earthlits, and we hope, like that every birthday party, there's probably somebody crying in the corner, there's cake smeared all over your faces, and you're feeling a little bit ill. Well, thank you for listening for the last 12 months, both myself and Mechanoise. Was that a raised fist through the window there, Mechanoise? He's very excited. He gets some cake later. We want to thank you for giving your support to 2080 Podcast. It started off as a companion to the Judge Dredd Mega Collection part work, but has evolved into something very special, and we thoroughly enjoy doing it. We hope you thoroughly enjoy listening. Tell you what, if you do enjoy it, please do give us a comment or a star rating on iTunes. Give us a like on SoundCloud or Podomatic. Spread the word on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and social media of your choice, of course, to introduce more Squawkstick Thargo to the wonder that is the 2080 Thrillcast. So once again, thanks very much, and Splundig Verthrig Squawkstick Thargo. Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2080 is in orbit every Wednesday from all good newsagents and comic book stores. 2080 is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2080online.com, or you can download the free 2080 app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000 space AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2080 classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more, are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at 2000AD. In the meantime, all hail Tharg the Mighty and Splundig Verthrig, Earthlits.